And this is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Michael Monks. Just this morning, the U.S. House Intelligence Committee released the whistleblower complaint related to President Trump's communication with Ukraine, which had previously led House Speaker Nancy Pelosi to launch an impeachment inquiry. More details are coming out with every passing hour. We'll talk about that in the Democratic presidential primary. We've got the full hour of national politics with the political junkie, Ken Rudin. And we also have with us Northern Kentucky University political science professor Ryan Salzman. He's filling in for WVXU senior political analyst Howard Wilkinson, who's at the Reds game today, Marty Brenneman's last game. So he's over there enjoying that game. I want to begin with a recap of what happened this week. We heard from a whistleblower about a phone call between President Trump and Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky. Trump was then accused of having pressured Zelensky to investigate former Vice President Joe Biden and his son Hunter, who had been doing business there. And Trump put this on a condition of releasing hundreds of millions of dollars in U.S. aid, is what was alleged. After that revelation, House Speaker Nancy Pelosi announced the launch of a formal impeachment inquiry. President Trump's White House then released a memo recapping the conversation. And then this morning, Acting Director of National Intelligence Joseph McGuire testified before Congress. He said the whistleblower acted properly, but more details are unfolding and there could be more to learn. I saw a tweet from Brett Baer, the respected Fox News evening anchor, who said of one revelation that's come out of this is that the whistleblower in his now released publicly complaint suggested that officials were told to lock down all records of this phone call between President Trump and the president of Ukraine, and that there may be other instances of similar phone calls that have been locked away. And Brett Baer said this offers a path for further investigation, for more materials to emerge. So, Ryan, how does this all play out? And this is the day what we're watching is just the beginning of something, right?
And it's very different than what we've been experiencing over the last 2+ years with the Russia investigation, because, as you mentioned, it is a roadmap forward. Representative Schiff and his release that he had, it was surprisingly brief. I actually got a fresh cup of coffee because I saw that Schiff had a release and I thought that I was going to be reading for the next 20 minutes. And I opened it up and it's just two paragraphs and it says the same thing. We have a roadmap forward. We have different avenues to explore, of which the first was this conversation with the Director of National Intelligence, but it is certainly not the last. And the fact that there's so many international players involved makes this really interesting, you know, because we don't know what the motivations of these individuals are going to be to bring forward information. Who was present for these conversations on this side, on the other side of the Atlantic? What do they have to gain or lose by this kind of information coming out? And it makes it, there's going to be a lot to uncover, but to your point, they have been given that path forward.
513-419-7100 is the number to call to join us. We are also joined by the political junkie, Ken Rudin. Ken, I'd like your thoughts on some of that. You know, right now, we've got what the White House released, we've got the whistleblower's report, and we've got this ongoing congressional testimony that's taking place today. I want to ask you about the memo that the White House put out on Wednesday, because you saw a lot of partisan responses to this, that yes, this proves there was a quid pro quo connected to the president's call to the Ukraine, that he would release the millions and millions of dollars in U.S. aid if there were an investigation into former Vice President Joe Biden and his son. And then, of course, there were the claims that this exonerates the president again, and there's nothing further to see here. So, Ken, let's talk a little bit about that White House memo. What were your thoughts on that?
Well, I don't know how the president gets off the hook on this at all, because it's interesting. I was watching the press conference the president gave yesterday at the United Nations, and it almost seemed, well, it almost seemed surreal in the fact that he was talking about how it was such a beautiful conversation and it was a perfect conversation. And I think he used the word beautiful over and over and over again, while at the same time saying that the president of Ukraine should meet with Barr, with Attorney General Barr and Rudy Giuliani, to get to the bottom of this Joe Biden investigation. And it sounds very similar. Look, not everything that Robert Mueller was investigating came to pass as far as what the Democrats would have preferred, But the fact is that the accusations are that the president wanted Russia to somehow intercede in his behalf to stop Hillary Clinton. And now it sounds like the president is trying to intercede, having the Ukrainians intercede on behalf of the president to stop Joe Biden. The ultimate accusation here, at least made by, as I understand it, from the whistleblower, is that once again, the president is reaching out to a foreign power to investigate a domestic rival. And again, is this, I don't even know if this is a crime. It certainly seems untoward, and it certainly seems like it's some kind of violation of the sanctity of elections and fair elections. And, you know, something I read somewhere that there's a presidential race. I understand that there are Democrats running for president, but I have not seen any reference of that for several days because this has taken over everything. And as Ryan just mentioned, whether this is 6 weeks or 6 months, I mean, look, Iowa caucuses are just about 4 months away from now. This will absorb and just overtake everything we're talking about for perhaps at least the next 6 months, if not the next year.
We're going to talk a little later about the potential impact this is having and could have later on the Democratic primary for president, particularly as it relates to Vice President Biden's campaign, since he is so connected to this story. And we'll also talk a little bit more about Rudy Giuliani and his role in this as well. But let's get some phone calls on the air. 513-419-7100 is the number to call if you'd like to join us. We'll go to the lines now. We have Bill on the line. Hi, Bill. What's your question or comment?
Hi. Both parties have taken $6 trillion out of Social Security. This is all a distraction. I'll take my answer off the air.
All right, Bill, we appreciate that. So Bill's calling to suggest that both parties are responsible in taking what he says is $6 trillion out of Social Security and that this is a distraction. Ryan, your thoughts on how we discuss national issues in this current age? There's an ongoing formal impeachment inquiry taking place in Washington, and how do we compartmentalize the issues of the day?
What's happening right now, today, is very important, and I think we all agree to that. But I can tell you that we're in a paradox when it comes to information and attention. There's only so much attention to go around, and the paradox is that we have more information than we've ever had before, and yet we seem to get tunnel vision when it comes to these kinds of things. But it begs the question, can you effectively deal with everything in front of you, or do you end up doing all of them inadequately? Or are we better off as a society, as deliberative bodies, as, quote, the media, focusing on not necessarily one thing at a time, but certainly giving the majority of our attention to that? The question becomes, when we've entered week number six and we've entered week number eight and then we've entered month number three, are we still keeping that tunnel vision even if nothing's changed just because it's so bombastic and we've become so accustomed to it? But Bill's absolutely right. There's a lot going on. And when we initially corresponded about getting together and having this conversation, I was very excited. I mean, I got to go on air to talk to the political junkie. I mean, this was going to be great. I started putting together list of things that I wanted to talk about. And immediately, the other day over the weekend, I just kind of turned that piece of paper over. Now, I didn't get rid of the paper, but I turned it over and started taking notes on this. So I had a physical change to what was going on. But again, I think that's because of the significance, because when you have the microphone in front of you, you can turn it to these other things, and these other things are certainly important, but what is facing the country right now is it moves beyond important. This is so consequential to everything that we know, and something has changed. Something has really changed, and so it does deserve our attention. But Bill, I'm sympathetic. There's a lot going on, and so hopefully we can have these conversations about everything.
And I'm a student of the media. I love conversations about the media. I would talk all hour about media issues if that's what this show were. I would love to do that. And I brought in a story to talk about a little bit later that may be relevant to Bill's call and his concern about this. We're going to talk about people's opinions of the media, a new Gallup poll just out, and we'll talk about the way the media handles these types of stories in the big picture. First, we will revisit something that I forgot to do at the top of the show, Ken, something very important, and that is your regular trivia question, which we have to get out to the listeners so they can call in. So listen up, everyone. Ken Rudin, the political junkie, what is this month's trivia question?
Well, as I referred to earlier, there is a presidential race going on, and and there's still a lot of candidates running, at least on the Democratic side. There are maybe three challenges that President Trump is getting, but on the Democratic side, while there may be only be 11 candidates in next month's debate, or next month's debate, there's still like 24, 23 candidates running. Anyway, the question is, with Iowa coming up in less than 4 months, who, and with all these candidates, who won the Iowa caucuses with the lowest percentage of the vote in history?
All right. So in Iowa caucus history, who won the Iowa caucus with the lowest percentage of the vote ever? Ken, if they get it right, tell them what they'll win.
They win. They are forced to watch the entire impeachment inquiry. They win an actual a political junkie button that is extremely. It's going gangbusters.
Yeah. A collector's item. Awesome thing. So give us a call at 513-419-7100. If you know in Iowa caucus history, who won it with the lowest percentage of the vote? And Ryan Salzman, a professor of political science here at NKU, you'll have the rest of the show to kind of think about it until we get the right answer. It's a pop quiz for the professor, and we'll see how you do as well. 513-419-7100. We've got more callers on the line we want to get to, a lot more analysis about what's going on with the president. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. Thanks for listening to Cincinnati Edition On Demand. Did you know you can have the show delivered straight to your smartphone every day? Just go to your favorite podcast listening app, search Cincinnati Edition, and subscribe. You'll be able to keep up with all our great conversations with newsmakers, public officials, and other interesting people from the greater Cincinnati region and beyond on the go, anytime, anywhere. It's great for those days you can't tune in to catch us live. Weekdays at noon on 91.7 WVXU. And this is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Michael Monks. We continue now with our full hour of national politics, and we're joined by the political junkie Ken Rudin and Northern Kentucky University professor of political science Ryan Salzman. Join us at 513-419-7100. Ken, I think just before we took that little break, you were starting to say something.
I just wanted to say something in reaction to what Bill said, because I think Bill made an important point that has been made before in the past. When during the Nixon impeachment trial and during the Clinton impeachment trial, there were proponents of both presidents who said this is a waste of time. There are so many other issues that are out there that we should be focusing on. And I understand that because there are a lot of issues. Look, I mean, think of all the things that have not been done by any Congress in the past gazillion years about guns and taxes and all these things. But again, as Lyndon Johnson once remarked about Gerald Ford, you know, you can walk, chew gum and walk at the same time. And that's why this is so important, because there's nothing more solemn or more troubling than the thought of removing a president who was duly elected by the people of the United States. And if the fact that Congress is bringing an inquiry into that possible conclusion, this is very crucial. So, yes, there are partisans on both sides that are trying to use this issue to their benefit. But the fact is that if there weren't so many troubling allegations out there, this wouldn't have reached the point it has now.
And though mass media and the impact that it has can sometimes be troubling and sometimes be misguided and maybe focus too much on one thing or focused on it in the wrong way, in this day and age, there's so many information sources available to have hyper-focused coverage of the issues that matter to you. Hopefully, Bill is able to find the right source to cover Social Security on a day that we're talking about impeaching the sitting president. 513-419-7100 is the number to call. We'll go back to the phone lines now. We've got Justin on the line. Hi, Justin. What's your question or comment?
Thank you for having me. I've got a two-part question regarding the transcripts between the two leaders. One, who sits and listens to the conversation between the president and other leaders? And two, seems like this is similar to the Russiagate whistleblower. It's almost like this is a routine now to try to find something the president is doing wrong other than focusing on real issues such as the cost of living. So I guess my question is, when will we move forward and stop kind of chipping away at our integrity of our nation. And I can take the answer off the air. I appreciate it.
Thanks for the call, Justin. We do appreciate that. So he's got a two-part question. And Ken, this call reminds me of the show that we did shortly after former special counsel Robert Mueller's testimony and the analysis of the Mueller report and what it found, because we did get some calls during that show that suggested it was a, quote, nothing burger. And I recall us going through the list of things that showed that that investigation did turn up some meat. It's not that it led to an indictment of the president, as some people may have wanted, but people went to prison for that. So are you seeing similar reaction to this situation that's unfolding before us involving the Ukraine, where it's being dismissed before we fully understand what's going on?
Well, you're absolutely right. I mean, the reaction, look, there are so many things to talk about here. When you talk about the reaction of the media to the Mueller report, there are a lot of people in the media saying that, well, we know that Trump conspired and colluded with the Russians, and yet Mueller couldn't prove that. So both sides were nervous about this. When Justin says that he's afraid of people chipping away at the integrity of the nation, who is doing that? Is it the Democrats who were trying to investigate the president, or is it the president who is ostensibly or allegedly trying to use a foreign power to assist in his reelection campaign? So both sides see a problem here, and there is a problem here. And look, ultimately, it's going to be decided. Look, impeachment from day one has always been a political decision and not necessarily a constitutional or legal consideration. And again, if the Democrats had not won control of the House in 2018, this wouldn't have been happening. So basically, we'll just have to see what happens for the next couple of months. But this whole country will be caught in the whole morass for all that time.
And Ryan, to the point about the integrity of the country, I guess there is something to be said about the nation that things have been a little chaotic. We've had some pretty significant congressional testimony unfold before us this year and really last year, both in confirming a Supreme Court justice and having a special counsel testify. And now we're at the very early stages of what could be another long situation involving Ukraine and the president. But the country's still functioning.
Yeah,
you know, the government's open today.
And that's the beauty of it. And I know that using that word beauty may seem off, but this is how the system is supposed to work. And these hearings and all the noise around it, I think that we need to be very careful to separate, you know, the actual hearings, kind of the more traditional media coverage, long form writing, investigative reporting that goes along with this, and then tweeting and all the rest of the social media applications out there, because that noise, these are two very, very different things. But that noise is also part of our system. So just in this rambling answer that I have, we got the First Amendment in play, whether it's the news media itself or individuals being able to express their opinions. But then we have this beautiful separation of powers and checks and balances going on right in front of us. When I started preparing my notes last night, as I was reading through the transcripts, my first note says, everything has changed. And my second note says, everything is the same. And I think that says a lot. And next to everything is the same, it's that the U.S. institutions are working. And actually, it's our fear that it's not working, I think, is what they're trying to resolve, that there's this concern that somebody who leads one of those institutions has misstepped in a way, but we're trying to rein it in. And this is how it's supposed to work. But there's a lot of fatigue that's going into this already. So when the Russia investigation, Russiagate, was getting going, everybody was fresh and eager and ready to have this conversation, and we could draw it out for hours or days or weeks. And now we just don't have that luxury. It's more like an athlete at the end of the season, where just a small misstep and they end up really hurting themselves. And unfortunately, that's where we are. But the reason that we're moving forward with this impeachment proceedings is because, again, from my first note, everything has changed. This is a really, really big deal. But the institutions themselves are working, and a lot of time is spent in my classes trying to reassure my students that this is how the system is set up to work, that our founders did not want a system where people would just roll over. If you want a very, very peaceful political system, you can go to North Korea. Okay, it's very, very peaceful because you don't misstep or else you're going to be taken out. But we didn't create that. And I like to use as an example the fact that, the root word of Congress is congressus, which means hostile encounter. So they actually created a system where we were supposed to put these people in a room and they were supposed to at least verbally duke it out. And occasionally they physically duked it out as well. But what that's to do is to prevent outright violence in the street. Now, flash forward a couple hundred years, and I think that we've forgotten that. We tend to elevate the founders to some kind of godlike status, and we presume that everything they did was to be kumbaya and that they were all on the same page. But it couldn't be more different from that. And I think that our founders, if they were looking at what's happening today, would actually be pretty satisfied that the system is working the way it is. And we owe it to ourselves to give this at least a week or two to take a breath and see what actually develops out of it. And then, only then, will we know a lot more.
And that's—
Can I just say, add one thing to the beginning of Justin's question was basically how many people knew about this conversation? According to Joe McGuire today, he said maybe about 10 to 12 people were in on the conversation or knew about the conversation. And my understanding of it is that many of them, of course, worked for the White House. And some of them wanted to bury the story and just, you know, make it disappear. And others were very aggrieved by what was happening. So there seemed to be tremendous dissension within the White House staff itself about what the propriety or lack of same this conversation proved.
Yeah, Justin wanted to know who listens. And I guess from what I'm reading, I'm certainly no expert on the inner workings of the White House, but it sounds like there are certain assigned individuals from the intelligence community who watch over these things. And we did hear the Director of National Intelligence, Joseph McGuire, before Congress say that he does not believe any leaks came from the intelligence community, but that other people within the federal government, within the White House, would have had access to information that was leaked to
the media. Well, and Michael, let's remember that that's just 10 to 12. I assume, Ken, you're talking about 10 to 12 on our side. There are people on
Correct.
The other side
Correct.
That are listening to these conversations Right. as well. And this is the black box that we haven't even begun to open up yet is, are we going to get any information from the other side, what they had heard, particularly if because of international relations and all the things going on with international relations, Ukraine might not be happy that they didn't get enough money. Well, will there all of a sudden come some kind of recording that's available at that point? And so, you know, we're dealing with the domestic side, but there's going to be a whole other, international side that's yet to be dealt with.
All right, let's go back to the phone lines now. We have Keith on the line. Hi, Keith. What's your question or comment?
Hi. My comment is kind of about more of the big picture of what's going on here. So what this whistleblower report shows is that allegedly, our president requested assistance in the 2020 election to beat his political rival. And so I am personally not worried about whether or not it was a quid pro quo, if the whistleblower's report was proper. What I'm concerned about is requesting this kind of foreign assistance delegitimizes our democracy and our elections. This isn't the first time it's happened, right? So we've heard the president say that he would be willing to accept foreign assistance. He just said it with Stephanopoulos, right? So what I'm concerned about is we have people now who don't believe in the legitimacy of our elections. And it's concerning because as recent as 2016, according to a Harvard research study by Yashka Monk, one out of six Americans today would prefer a military rule. One out of six. This has increased from one out of 16 in 1995. Only 19% of millennials say that military rule would be illegitimate. I am worried that we are ruining our institutions, and we're on the fast track to becoming a failed democracy or a banana republic.
Keith, thanks so much for that call and the comment. We appreciate it. We'll get one more call in before we get the answer to our trivia question as we shift back and forth from this very serious conversation to our fun element of the show, the monthly trivia question. 513-419-7100 is the number to call. David is up next. Hi, David.
Hi. Thanks for taking the call.
Absolutely. Go ahead with your question.
It's kind of in response to the last caller here. I think I would like to see this. It seems like the entire conversation right now has very much been from the media couched as a personal political benefit to President Trump, which may be accurate, but I think the entire other side of the conversation, which is investigation into credible corruption allegations by Joe Biden, has got to be missed. And it seems like that should also be equally as important for people covering this, and that's more of a matter of public interest. I don't think it's okay that if you just run for president, and it becomes, you know, de facto a political issue for a sitting president that you get to avoid investigation for corruption. And people say there's no evidence of corruption. Well, that's what the investigation should be for.
David, your point's well taken, and we do absolutely have that on our agenda here today. You will hear that conversation as we start to put that into context of how it impacts the former vice president in his quest to become the next president. So thanks so much for listening, and thanks for that phone call. Before we take another short break to raise some more money for Cincinnati Public Radio 91.7 WVXU, we want to get back to that trivia question. Ken Rudin, the Political Junkie's monthly trivia question now is, in Iowa caucus history, who won with the lowest percentage of the vote ever? We did get a call earlier from Kathy, and Ken, her guess was John Kennedy.
John Kennedy ran for president in 1960. There were no Iowa caucuses, no Iowa preferential caucuses back in 1960.
So that is incorrect. And Ryan, you've written your answer down, I hope. Don't say it if you have, but you got an answer to write down?
I do.
All right, so stand by. We'll go to Steve now. Steve has an answer. Hi, Steve. What do you think?
Hello?
Hi, Steve. Go ahead with your answer.
Hey, sorry, you cut out there for a second.
Apologies.
I think it might be Rick Santorum.
Ken.
I think I read that somewhere once.
Rick Santorum, who won the 2012 Iowa caucuses on the Republican side with 24.6% of the vote, is the correct answer.
Yeah. Ding, ding.
Wow, that's... He answered it quickly than I thought, because there are a lot of people who came close. A lot of people had low numbers, but Rick Santorum is the correct answer.
Awesome. Congratulations, Steve. Our producer, Selena Reeder, will take you offline now and get your information so you can get that fancy political junkie button. So congratulations to you. Ryan, we have to grade your pop quiz. How'd you do? What was your guess?
I failed. I had John Kerry.
Oh, okay. Yeah. So his guess was John Kerry.
It was low. You know, I thought 30-something percent would be low enough, but 24%, I mean, that is, you don't pass my exams with 24%, but apparently you can win the Iowa caucus, so we'll take that.
Oh, but a lot of guys did in the 20s. Ted Cruz won with 27%.
Wow.
Bob Dole, the second time, won with 26%. So there have been candidates in the mid-20s. Yeah.
Well, I guess we'll note that, you know, Iowa happens so early that occasionally in some cycles there are four or five candidates who are running solid campaigns, and that certainly lowers the amount you need to win. So, Steve, the big winner.
And in North Korea, by the way, North Korea, the lowest number was 100%.
And this is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Michael Monks, and we continue now with our full hour and the last little bit of our full hour of the Political Junkie. We've got Ken Rudin himself on the line with us, and Northern Kentucky University Professor of Political Science, Ryan Salzman. 513-419-7100 is the number to call to join our conversation. Ken, we've got to bring Vice President Joe Biden into this equation, because this whole Ukraine thing seemed to be unfolding because of President Trump suggesting that former Vice President Joe Biden and his son Hunter should be investigated. What can you tell us about the Bidens and Ukraine and what Trump is getting at?
Well, I don't know, because I'm not sure if there's a there. Now, David, one of your callers earlier ago asked the question that this is very important. We need to know what Joe Biden did if he's going to be judged as a possible candidate for the presidency. And I'm not sure if this goes beyond an accusation out of thin air from the president and Rudy Giuliani, or there is something there. But it's my understanding that when Joe Biden's son, Hunter, worked in Ukraine, there was some investigation that Joe Biden, as vice president or former vice president, tried to dissuade or get rid of a prosecutor. And from what I understand is that every investigation on that accusation show that there was nothing there, that it just didn't happen. But that's like, you know, it's like the president with the Hillary emails and the Obama people trying to bug the Trump campaign. There are accusations out there. And even if they're not accusations, the president is very fond of saying, well, this should be investigated. Well, I don't know if it's really happening, but somebody should look into it. And of course, when you ask the leader of a foreign government to look into it, I think we cross a line there. But I don't know, honestly, what's there. Joe Biden has a lot of things, a lot of strikes against him. I'm not sure about his activities regarding the Ukraine situation is one of them.
It seems that the president was quite effective in painting Hillary Clinton, the last Democratic nominee in 2016, as corrupt, Ryan. What does this look like in terms of the president trying to do the same to the former vice president?
Well, if it's worked once, do it again. And I think that there's certainly, I mean, you can hear the chants of corrupt Joe, you know, now echoing through particularly, you know, lots of big
It doesn't
arenas.
Roll off the tongue as well as Sleepy Joe, which is the moniker that President
funny.
Trump has
if you
given
do it
him.
Right, though, you get multiple names.
I
think that's being laid. But, you know, I keep coming back again and again to the fact that international relations are happening here. And I tried to search high and low for some information related to the Biden investigation in Ukraine. Of course, it's very difficult to find because of the nature of that society and then also what was happening. But, you know, the things that I read, I kept wondering, it seemed like the Ukrainians were bringing this potential investigation and potential issues to Trump as a way of, wait for it, currying favor, you know, to try to get something. You know, let's not forget that a big part of the Ukraine was taken from them by another country, and this country continues to breathe down their neck. And they're really caught between a rock and a hard place. And these are smart individuals. I know in our tendencies towards American exceptionalism, we just sometimes can't believe that other countries would have things that they want to accomplish and that they need to get done, or that leaders of those countries have things that they want to accomplish or get done. Leading into this year, there was a big election in the Ukraine. They're vying different sides or trying to get some kind of advantage. That advantage can often come by being well-positioned with a very strong country like the United States of America, whether it's political protection or at a certain point, military protection. And so when I kept reading these stories about the vice president and his son, I kept thinking, you know, this was something that was going to be really positive for Ukraine to do as a way of trying to draw President Trump in and maybe get more juice from the American fruit. And that, to me, kind of passes the sniff test, right? That it's kind of the simplest answer is that they're trying to get something done, just as why the current president keeps trying to get President Trump to appear with him. It's to actually try to keep Russia a little bit farther at bay. So this is a big part of this, and it's going to make it really complicated moving forward, is the nature of the other country involved. But let's be clear. I mean, committing a crime in another country is not the same thing as committing a crime in your country. So there's going to be a lot of attempts to draw an analogy between what Biden, quote, did, which, again, there's no evidence that he did that, in the Ukraine, and what the president may have done here in the United States of America. But our laws apply here. Our laws do not apply in the Ukraine. These are two totally different things. And one appears to have happened or not happened, and the other one certainly did not happen. So they're trying to find out one or the other.
Okay, Ken, what does this mean for Joe Biden's presidential run? What does he have to do to navigate these waters?
Well, you know something, that's a good question, and it's almost a tricky question, because everything I've seen of Joe Biden, certainly in the three debates so far, he has not looked great. And I don't need to repeat what Julian Castro said with those sly comments about his age, but he has not given coherent answers, I think, to a lot of questions. I think the problem with Joe Biden is that, as Kamala Harris said in the first debate, that, well, you know, he's wedded to the past and he had views on certain issues like busing. That certainly is not the majority view of this new moving to the left Democratic Party. But having said that, you know, I mean, look, Elizabeth Warren is among those who questioned Joe Biden's hesitancy about embracing new ideas. Kamala Harris talked about segregation and senators from the 1970s, and Julian Castro talked about his age. But when you also have the president of the United States trying to go after Joe Biden, ostensibly, then you wonder if this could either, one, benefit Joe Biden, because why would the other Democrats be attacking Joe Biden? They probably may want to rally around him because the president is attacking him. But at the same time, I think what it does is freezes the Democratic field, and almost everybody else is trying to make a difference or get some traction. Those in the lower echelons of the poll numbers They're being blocked out because everything is about Joe Biden and this investigation, which, as you know, as Ryan says, may not be there. But the fact is that we're still talking about Joe, and I don't know if he benefits from it. I don't know if he gets sympathy, but it certainly freezes up the political conversation about the Democratic Party.
And in a new national poll from Quinnipiac, one of the more respected pollsters, as rated by 538, Elizabeth Warren, the Massachusetts senator, leads former Vice President Joe Biden 27-25. And
in Iowa, too.
That's right. In the state-specific poll, Elizabeth Warren is ahead there as well. Bernie Sanders, the Vermont senator, is a distant third now. Polling at 16%. So this is the point in the race where you could see it becoming a two-person, maybe a three-person race. And it appears that Elizabeth Warren, you know, a couple more polls come out and she may solidly claim front-runner status on this. So it seems like this week could go either way for Joe Biden is what it sounds like you're saying, Ken.
But how about this theory? I mean, not that everything is Machiavellian, but how about if the Trump people are trying to rip down Joe Biden, what happens, the consequence of that is that Elizabeth Warren rises in the polls, and Elizabeth Warren, for all we know, her call for Medicare for All and the Green New Deal and all these kind of plans may not sell with the American people. They may seem to be too radical or too expensive or just, you know, too much. Taxes would be raised too much to pay for these things. So you wonder if maybe by tearing down Joe Biden, Elizabeth Warren rises in the polls, and the Democrats wind up with somebody who's just too left-wing to win. Now, progressives will disagree with that assessment, but you just wonder, there are a lot of consequences in attacking and the president deciding to go after a Democratic candidate. Obviously, in 2016, there was only one Democrat, certainly by the time of the nomination, to go after Hillary Clinton, and she paid the price. I mean, somehow in a race between two unpopular candidates, Hillary Clinton was seen as more unpopular. It's much more hard to calculate when you have 273 candidates running now.
Okay, we'll go back to the phones one more time because we have Steve who won the trivia question. He's coming back for a victory lap. He's apparently got a question. So, Steve, welcome back. We've only got about 20 seconds for your question, so go ahead with it.
Thank you. Real quick. Okay, back in 94, Paula Jones made the accusation against Clinton, and Republicans immediately began talking about impeachment, though they didn't do it for about 4 years. But it really helped him in his 96 election, and it helped Democrats in the 98 midterm. The House impeached, the Senate did not. I can see almost a reverse happening here. Do you think the Democrats might be shooting themselves in the foot?
Steve, thanks for the question. We'll hang up and answer. Thanks for hanging around for us, and congratulations again. Ryan, very quickly.
Well, I just don't think that these are similar situations. There's only been a few impeachments, and I think, you know, being accused of an affair is a lot different than potentially inviting interference into an election. So I'm a little apprehensive, but I think that we're seeing some polling already that shows that as people are more informed about the accusations surrounding the Ukraine and the president's conversations, that the support for impeachment actually goes up. And so I think that that's very issue specific here. And it's more similar to me to a Nixon situation than it is to a Clinton situation. Of course, that seems weird because Nixon wasn't impeached, but he clearly was going to be. And so I would look more towards what happened in the 70s than I would towards what happened in the early 90s.
And here's
That's why Nancy Pelosi was so hesitant, because she was afraid that the Trump would benefit the way Democrats benefited from the Clinton impeachment in 98.
In 1999, according to Gallup, 55% of Americans trusted the media a great deal, or at least a fair amount. In a new Gallup poll just out, that number is only 41%. 69% of Democrats feel that way about the media, that they trust a great deal or a fair amount. Only 15% of Republicans and 36% of independents trust the media. That's going to be a factor in the way people feel about what's going on. The political junkie, Ken Rudin, thanks for being with us again. We had a great time.
Thanks, Mike. It was a great show.
And Northern Kentucky University professor of political science, Ryan Salzman, thanks for pinch hitting for our buddy Howard Wilkinson.
Pinch hitting. I see what you did there.
Yeah,
my pleasure.
How about that? You've been listening to Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Michael Monks.